The Great Hunt by Robert Jordan. Copyright 1991 by Robert Jordan. And it shall come to pass that what men made shall be shattered, and the shadow shall lie across the pattern of the age, and the Dark One shall once more lay his hand upon the world of man. Women shall weep and men quail as the nations of the earth are rent like rotting cloth. Neither shall anything stand nor abide. Yet one shall be born to face the shadow, born once more as he was born before, and shall be born again time without end. The dragon shall be reborn, and there shall be wailing and gnashing of teeth at his rebirth. In sackcloth and ashes shall he clothe the people, and he shall break the world again by his coming, tearing apart all ties that bind. Like the unfettered dawn shall he blind us and burn us. Yet shall the dragon reborn confront the shadow at the last battle, and his blood shall give us the light. Let tears flow, O ye people of the world. Weep for your salvation. From the Koreathon Cycle, The Prophecies of the Dragon, as translated by Elaine Moresa-Eddin Alshin, Chief Librarian at the Court of Arafel, in the year of Grace 231, of the New Era, the Third Age. Prologue. In the Shadow. The man who called himself Bors, at least in this place, sneered at the low murmuring that rolled around the vaulted chamber like the soft gabble of geese. His grimace was hidden by the black silk mask that covered his face, though, just like the masks that covered the 100 other faces in the chamber. 100 black masks and 100 pairs of eyes trying to see what lay behind them. If one did not look too closely, the room could have been in a palace, with its tall marble fireplaces and its golden lamps hanging from the domed ceiling, its colorful tapestries and intricately patterned mosaic floor. If one did not look too closely. The fireplaces were cold, for one thing. Flames danced on logs as thick as a man's leg, but gave no heat. The walls behind the tapestries, the ceiling high above the lamps, were undressed stone, almost black. There were no windows, and only two doorways, one at either end of the room. It was as if someone had intended to give the semblance of a palace reception chamber, but had not cared enough to bother with more than the outline and a few touches for detail. Where the chamber was, the man who called himself Bors did not know, nor did he think any of the others knew. He did not like to think about where it might be. It was enough that he had been summoned. He did not like to think about that either, but for such a summons, even he came. He shifted his cloak, thankful that the fires were cold, else it would have been too hot for the black wool draping him to the floor. All his clothes were black. The bulky folds of the cloak hid the stoop he used to disguise his height and bred confusion as to whether he was thin or thick. He was not the only one there enveloped in a tailor's span of cloth. Silently, he watched his companions. Patience had marked much of his life. Always, if he waited and watched long enough, someone made a mistake. Most of the men and women here might have had the same philosophy. They watched and listened silently to those who had to speak. Some people could not bear waiting or silence, and so gave away more than they knew. Servants circulated through the guests, slender, golden-haired youths, proffering wine with a bow and a wordless smile. Young men and young women alike, they wore tight white breeches and flowing white shirts. And male and female alike, they moved with disturbing grace. Each looked more than a mirror image of the others, the boys as handsome as the girls were beautiful. He doubted he could distinguish one from another, and he had an eye and a memory for faces. A smiling, white-clad girl offered her tray of crystal goblets to him. He took one with no intention of drinking. It might appear untrusting, or worse, and either could be deadly here, if he refused altogether, but anything could be slipped into a drink. Surely some among his companions would have no objections to seeing the number of their rivals for power dwindle, whomever the unlucky ones happened to be. Idly he wondered whether the servants would have to be disposed of after this meeting. Servants hear everything. As the serving girl straightened from her bow, his eye caught hers above that sweet smile. blank eyes, empty eyes, a doll's eyes. Eyes more dead than death. He shivered as she moved gracefully away and raised the goblet to his lips before he caught himself. It was not what had been done to the girl that chilled him. Rather, every time he thought he detected a weakness in those he now served, he found himself preceded, the supposed weakness cut out with a ruthless precision that left him amazed and worried. The first rule of his life had always been to search for weakness, for every weakness was a chink where he could probe and pry and influence. If his current masters, his masters for the moment, had no weakness. Frowning behind his mask, he studied his companions. At least there was plenty of weakness there. Their nervousness betrayed them, even those who had sense enough to guard their tongues. A stiffness in the way this one held himself, a jerkiness in the way that one handled her skirts. A good quarter of them, he estimated, had not bothered with disguise beyond the black masks. Their clothes told much. A woman standing before a gold and crimson wall hanging, speaking softly to a figure, impossible to say whether it was man or woman, cloaked and hooded in gray. She had obviously chosen the spot because the colors of the tapestry set off her garb. Doubly foolish to draw attention to herself, for her scarlet dress, cut low in the bodice, to show too much flesh and high at the hem to display golden slippers, marked her from Ilion, and a woman of wealth, perhaps even of noble blood. Not far beyond the Ilioner, another woman stood, alone and admirably silent. With a swan's neck and lustrous black hair falling in waves below her waist, she kept her back to the stone wall, observing everything. No nervousness there, only serene self-possession. Very admirable, that, but her coppery skin and her creamy high-necked gown, leaving nothing but her hands uncovered, yet clinging and only just barely opaque, so that it hinted at everything and revealed nothing, marked her just as clearly of the first blood of the Ara-Doman. And unless the man who called himself Bors missed his guess entirely, the wide golden bracelet on her left wrist bore her house symbols. That would be for her own house. No Domani bloodborn would bend her stiff pride enough to wear the sigils of another house. Worse than foolishness. A man in a high-collared sky-blue Shinaran coat passed him with a wary head-to-toe glance through the eye-holes of his mask. The man's carriage named him Soldier. The set of his shoulders, the way his gaze never rested in one place for long, and the way his hand seemed ready to dart for a sword that was not there, all proclaimed it. The Shinaran wasted little time on the man who called himself Bors. Stooped shoulders and a bent back held no threat. The man who called himself Bors snorted as the Shinaran moved on, right hand clenching and eyes already studying elsewhere for danger. He could read them all, to class and country. Merchant and warrior, commoner and noble. From Kandor and Kyrian, Saldaea and Giladan. From every nation and nearly every people. His nose wrinkled in sudden disgust. Even a tinker, in bright green breeches and a virulent yellow coat. We can do without those come the day. The disguised ones were no better, many of them cloaked and shrouded as they were. He caught sight under the edge of one dark robe of the silver-worked boots of a High Lord of Tyr, and under another a glimpse of golden lion-head spurs worn only by high officers in the Andorran Queen's Guards. A slender fellow, slender even in a floor-dragging black robe and an anonymous gray cloak caught with a plain silver pin, watched from the shadows of his deep cowl. He could be anyone from anywhere, except for the six-pointed star tattooed on the web between thumb and forefinger of his right hand. One of the sea folk, then. And a look at his left hand would show the marks of his clan and line. The man who called himself Bors did not bother to try. Suddenly his eyes narrowed, fixing on a woman, enveloped in black till nothing showed but her fingers. On her right hand rested a gold ring in the shape of a serpent eating its own tail. Aes Sedai, or at least a woman trained in Tar Valon by Aes Sedai. None else would wear that ring. Either way made no difference to him. He looked away before she could notice his watching, and almost immediately he spotted another woman swathed from head to toe in black and wearing a great serpent ring. The two witches gave no sign that they knew each other. In the White Tower, they sat like spiders in the middle of a web, pulling the strings that made kings and queens dance, meddling. Curse them all to death eternal. He realized that he was grinding his teeth. If numbers must dwindle, and they must before the day, there were some who would be missed even less than tinkers. A chime sounded, a single shivering note that came from everywhere at once and cut off all other sounds like a knife. The tall doors at the far end of the chamber swung open, and two Trollocs stepped into the room, spikes decorating the black mail that hung to their knees. Everyone shied back, even the man who called himself Bors. Head and shoulders taller than the tallest man there, they were a stomach-turning blend of man and animal, human faces twisted and altered. One had a heavy, pointed beak where his mouth and nose should have been, and feathers covered his head instead of hair. The other walked on hooves, his face pushed out in a hairy muzzle, and goat horns stuck up above his ears. Ignoring the humans, the Trollocs turned back toward the door and bowed, servile and cringing. The feathers on the one lifted in a tight crest. A Murdral stepped between them, and they fell to their knees. It was garbed in black that made the Trollocs' mail and the humans' masks seem bright, garments that hung still without a ripple as it moved with a viper's glance. The man who called himself Bors felt his lips drawing back over his teeth, half snarl and half, he was ashamed to admit even to himself, fear. It had its face uncovered, its pasty, pale face, a man's face, but eyeless as an egg, like a maggot in a grave. The smooth white face swiveled, regarding them all one by one, it seemed. A visible shiver ran through them under that eyeless look. Thin, bloodless lips quirked in what might almost have been a smile, as one by one the masked ones tried to press back into the crowd, milling to avoid that gaze. The Murdral's look shaped them into a semicircle facing the door. The one who called himself Bors swallowed. "There will come a day, half-man, when the great lord of the dark comes again. He will choose his new dreadlords, and you will cower before them. You will cower before men, before me. Why doesn't it speak? Stop staring at me and speak." "Your master comes," the Murdral's voice rasped like a dry snakeskin crumbling. "To your bellies, worms. Grovel lest his brilliance blind and burn you."
Rage filled the man who called himself Bors at the tone as much as the words, but then the air above the halfman shimmered, and the import drove home.
"It can't be. It can't."
The Trollocs were already on their bellies, writhing as if they wanted to burrow into the floor. Without waiting to see if anyone else moved, the man who called himself Bors dropped face down, grunting as he bruised himself on the stone. Words sprang to his lips like a charm against danger. They were a charm, though a thin reed against what he feared. And he heard 100 other voices, breathy with fear, speaking the same against the floor.
"The great lord of the dark is my master, and most heartily do I serve him to the last shred of my very soul."
In the back of his mind, a voice chattered with fear.
"The dark one and all the forsaken are bound."
Shivering, he forced it to silence. He had abandoned that voice long since.
"Lo, my master is death's master. Asking nothing do I serve against the day of his coming, yet do I serve in the sure and certain hope of life everlasting. Bound in Shale Ghul. Bound by the Creator at the moment of creation. No, I serve a different master now. Surely the faithful shall be exalted in the land, exalted above the unbelievers, exalted above thrones. Yet do I serve humbly against the day of his return. The hand of the Creator shelters us all, and the light protects us from the shadow. No, no, a different master. Swift come the day of return. Swift come the great lord of the dark to guide us and rule the world forever and ever."
The man who called himself Bors finished the creed, panting, as if he had run 10 miles. The rasp of breath all around him told him he was not the only one.
"Rise, all of you, rise."
The mellifluous voice took him by surprise.
Surely none of his companions, lying on their bellies with their masked faces pressed to the mosaic tiles, would have spoken. But it was not the voice he expected from. Cautiously, he raised his head enough to see with one eye. The figure of a man floated in the air above the murderall, the hem of his blood-red robe hanging a span over the half-man's head. Masked and blood-red, too. Would the great Lord of the Dark appear to them as a man? And masked, besides? Yet the murderall, its very gaze fear, trembled and almost cowered where it stood in the figure's shadow. The man who called himself Bors grasped for an answer his mind could contain without splitting. One of the Forsaken, perhaps. That thought was only a little less painful. Even so, it meant the day of the Dark One's return must be close at hand, if one of the Forsaken was free. The Forsaken. 13 of the most powerful wielders of the One Power in an age filled with powerful wielders had been sealed up in Sheol Gul along with the Dark One, sealed away from the world of men by the Dragon and the 100 Companions. And the backblast of that sealing had tainted the male half of the True Source. And all the male Aes Sedai, those cursed wielders of the power, went mad and broke the world, tore it apart like a pottery bowl smashed on rocks, ending the age of legends before they died, rotting while they still lived. A fitting death for Aes Sedai, to his mind. Too good for them. He regretted only that the women had been spared. Slowly, painfully, he forced the panic to the back of his mind, confined it and held it tight, though it screamed to get out. It was the best he could do. None of those on their bellies had risen, and only a few had even dared raise their heads.
"Rise!"
There was a snap in the red-masked figure's voice this time. He gestured with both hands.
"Stand!"
The one who called himself Bors scrambled up awkwardly, but halfway to his feet he hesitated. Those gesturing hands were horribly burned, crisscrossed by black fissures, the raw flesh between as red as the figure's robes. Would the Dark One appear so? Even one of the Forsaken? The eye holes of that blood-red mask swept slowly across him, and he straightened hastily. He thought he could feel the heat of an open furnace in that gaze. The others obeyed the command with no more grace and no less fear in their rising. When all were on their feet, the floating figure spoke.
"I have been known by many names, but the one by which you shall know me is Baal-Zamon."
The man who called himself Bors clamped his teeth to keep them from chattering. Baal-Zamon. In the Trolloc tongue, it meant Heart of the Dark, and even unbelievers knew it was the Trolloc name for the great Lord of the Dark. He whose name must not be uttered. Not the true name, Shaitan, but still forbidden. Among those gathered here, and others of their kind, to sully either with a human tongue was blasphemy. His breath whistled through his nostrils, and all around him he could hear others panting behind their masks. The servants were gone and the Trollocs as well, though he had not seen them go.
"The place where you stand lies in the shadow of Sheol Gul."
More than one voice moaned at that. The man who called himself Bors was not sure his own was not among them. A touch of what might almost be called mockery entered Baal-Zamon's voice as he spread his arms wide.
"Fear not, for the day of your master's rising upon the world is near at hand. The day of return draws nigh. Does it not tell you so that I am here, to be seen by you, favored few, among your brothers and sisters? Soon the wheel of time will be broken. Soon the great serpent will die, and with the power of that death, the death of time itself, your master will remake the world in his own image for this age and for all ages to come. And those who serve me, faithful and steadfast, will sit at my feet above the stars in the sky and rule the world of men forever. So have I promised, and so shall it be without end. You shall live and rule forever."
A murmur of anticipation ran through the listeners, and some even took a step forward toward the floating crimson shape, their eyes lifted, rapturous. Even the man who called himself Bors felt the pull of that promise, the promise for which he had dealt away his soul 100 times over.
"The day of return comes closer," Balsamon said. "But there is much yet to do, much to do."
The air to Balsamon's left shimmered and thickened, and the figure of a young man hung there, a little lower than Balsamon. The man who called himself Bors could not decide whether it was a living being or not. A country lad, by his clothes, with a light of mischief in his brown eyes and the hint of a smile on his lips, as if in memory or anticipation of a prank. The flesh looked warm, but the chest did not move with breath. The eyes did not blink. The air to Balsamon's right wavered as if with heat, and a second country-clad figure hung suspended a little below Balsamon. A curly-haired youth, as heavily muscled as a blacksmith. And an oddity. A battle-axe hung at his side, a great steel half-moon, balanced by a thick spike. The man who called himself Bors suddenly leaned forward, intent on an even greater strangeness. A youth with yellow eyes. For the third time, air solidified into the shape of a young man, this time directly under Balsamon's eye, almost at his feet. A tall fellow, with eyes now gray, now almost blue as the light took them, and dark, reddish hair. Another villager or farmer. The man who called himself Bors gasped. Yet another thing out of the ordinary, though he wondered why he should expect anything to be ordinary here. A sword swung from the figure's belt, a sword with a bronze heron on the scabbard, and another inset into the long two-handed hilt. A village boy with a heron mark blade? Impossible. What can it mean? And a boy with yellow eyes? He noticed the murderer looking at the figures, trembling. And unless he misjudged entirely, its trembling was no longer fear, but hatred. Dead silence had fallen, silence that Balsamon let deepen before he spoke.
"There is now one who walks the world. One who was and will be, but is not yet the dragon."
A startled murmur ran through his listeners.
"The dragonborn! We are to kill him, great lord!"
That from the Shinaran, hand grasping eagerly at his side where his sword would hang.
"Perhaps," Balsamon said simply. "And perhaps not. Perhaps he can be turned to my use. Sooner or later it will be so, in this age or another."
The man who called himself Bors blinked. "In this age or another? I thought the day of return was near. What matter to me what happens in another age if I grow old and die waiting in this one?" But Balsamon was speaking again.
"Already a bend is forming in the pattern, one of many points where he who will become the dragon may be turned to my service. Must be turned. Better that he serve me alive than dead, but alive or dead, serve me he must and will. These three you must know, for each is a thread in the pattern I mean to weave, and it will be up to you to see that they are placed as I command. Study them well, that you will know them."
Abruptly, all sound was gone. The man who called himself Bors shifted uneasily and saw others doing the same. All but the Ilianer woman, he realized. With her hands spread over her bosom, as if to hide the rounded flesh she exposed, eyes wide, half frightened and half ecstatic, she was nodding eagerly as though to someone face to face with her. Sometimes she appeared to give a reply, but the man who called himself Bors heard not a word. Suddenly she arched backwards, trembling and rising on her toes. He could not see why she did not fall, unless something unseen held her. Then, just as abruptly, she settled back to her feet and nodded again, bowing, shivering. Even as she straightened, one of the women wearing a great serpent ring gave a start and began nodding. "So each of us hears his own instructions, and none hears another's," the man who called himself Bors muttered in frustration. If he knew what even one other was commanded, he might be able to use the knowledge to advantage. But this way, Impatiently he waited for his turn, forgetting himself enough to stand straight. One by one the gathering received their orders, each walled in silence, yet still giving tantalizing clues, if only he could read them. The man of the Atha'an Mier, the sea folk, stiffening with reluctance as he nodded. The Shainaran, his stance bespeaking confusion even while he acquiesced. The second woman of Tarvalin, giving a start, as of shock, and the gray-swathed figure, whose sex he could not determine, shaking its head, before falling to its knees and nodding vigorously. Some underwent the same convulsion as the Ilioner woman, as if pain itself lifted them to toe-tips.
Bors.
The man who called himself Bors jerked as a red mask filled his eyes. He could still see the room, still see the floating shape of Baal Zemon and the three figures before him, but at the same time, all he could see was the red-masked face. Dizzy, he felt as if his skull were splitting open and his eyes were being pushed out of his head. For a moment, he thought he could see flames through the eye-holes of the mask.
"Are you faithful, Bors?"
The hint of mocking in the name sent a chill down his backbone.
"I am faithful, great lord. I cannot hide from you. I am faithful, I swear it."
"No, you cannot."
The certainty in Baalzamon's voice dried his mouth, but he forced himself to speak.
"Command me, great lord, and I obey."
"Firstly, you are to return to Taraban and continue your good works. In fact, I command you to redouble your efforts."
He stared at Baalzamon in puzzlement, but then fires flared again behind the mask, and he took the excuse of a bow to pull his eyes away.
"As you command, great lord, so shall it be."
"Secondly, you will watch for the three young men and have your followers watch. Be warned, they are dangerous."
The man who called himself Bors glanced at the figures floating in front of Baalzamon.
"How can I do that? I can see them, but I can't see anything except his face."
His head felt about to burst. Sweat slicked his hands under his thin gloves, and his shirt clung to his back.
"Dangerous, great lord. Farm boys. Is one of them the—"
"A sword is dangerous to the man at the point, but not to the man at the hilt. Unless the man holding the sword is a fool, or careless, or unskilled. In which case, it is twice as dangerous to him as to anyone else. It is enough that I have told you to know them. It is enough that you obey me."
"As you command, great lord, so shall it be."
"Thirdly, regarding those who have landed at Toman Head and the Domani, of this you will speak to no one. When you return to Taraban—"
The man who called himself Bors realized as he listened that his mouth was sagging open. The instructions made no sense. If I knew what some of the others were told, perhaps I could piece it together. Abruptly, he felt his head grasped as though by a giant hand crushing his temples, felt himself being lifted, and the world blew apart in 1,000 starbursts, each flash of light becoming an image that fled across his mind or spun and dwindled into the distance before he could more than barely grasp it. An impossible sky of striated clouds, red and yellow and black, racing as if driven by the mightiest wind the world had ever seen. A woman, a girl, dressed in white, receded into blackness and vanished as soon as she appeared. A raven stared him in the eye, knowing him, and was gone. An armored man in a brutal helm, shaped and painted and gilded like some monstrous poisonous insect, raised a sword and plunged to one side beyond his view. A horn, curled and golden, came hurtling out of the far distance. One piercing note it sounded as it flashed toward him, tugging his soul. At the last instant, it flashed into a blinding golden ring of light that passed through him, chilling him beyond death. A wolf leaped from the shadows of lost sight and ripped out his throat. He could not scream. The torrent went on, drowning him, burying him. He could barely remember who he was or what he was. The skies rained fire and the moon and stars fell. Rivers ran in blood and the dead walked. The earth split open and fountained molten rock. The man who called himself Bors found himself half crouching in the chamber with the others, most watching him, all silent. Wherever he looked, up or down or in any direction, the masked face of Baal-Zamon overwhelmed his eyes. The images that had flooded into his mind were fading. He was sure many were already gone from memory. Hesitantly, he straightened, Baal-Zamon always before him.
Great Lord, what?
Some commands are too important to be known, even by he who carries them out. The man who called himself Bors bent almost double in his bow.
As you command, great lord, he whispered hoarsely, so shall it be.
When he straightened, he was alone in silence once more. Another, the Terran High Lord, nodded and bowed to someone none else saw. The man who called himself Bors put an unsteady hand to his brow, trying to hold on to something of what had burst through his mind, though he was not completely certain he wanted to remember. The last remnant flickered out, and suddenly he was wondering what it was that he was trying to recall. I know there was something, but what? There was something, wasn't there? He rubbed his hands together, grimacing at the feel of sweat under his gloves, and turned his attention to the three figures hanging suspended before Balsamon's floating form. The muscular, curly-haired youth, the farmer with the sword, and the lad with a look of mischief on his face. Already in his mind, the man who called himself Bors had named them the blacksmith, the swordsman, and the trickster. What is their place in the puzzle? They must be important, or Baal-Zamon would not have made them the center of this gathering. But from his orders alone, they could all die at any time, and he had to think that some of the others, at least, had orders as deadly for the three. How important are they? Blue eyes could mean the nobility of Andor, unlikely in those clothes. And there were Borderlanders with light eyes, as well as some Terrans, not to mention a few from Gilladan, and of course... No help there. But Yellow Eyes? Who are they? What are they? He started at a touch on his arm and looked around to find one of the white-clad servants, a young man, standing by his side. The others were back, too, more than before, one for each of the masked. He blinked. Baal-Zamon was gone. The Murdral was gone, too, and only Rough Stone was where the door it had used had been. The three figures still hung there, though. He felt as if they were staring at him.
If it please you, my Lord Bors, I will show you to your room.
Avoiding those dead eyes, he glanced once more at the three figures, then followed. Uneasily, he wondered how the youth had known what name to use. It was not until the strange carved doors closed behind him, and they had walked a dozen paces, that he realized he was alone in the corridor with the servant. His brows drew down suspiciously behind his mask, but before he could open his mouth, the servant spoke.
The others are also being shown to their rooms, my lord. If you please, my lord. Time is short, and our master is impatient.
The man who called himself Bors ground his teeth, both at the lack of information and at the implication of sameness between himself and the servant, but he followed in silence. Only a fool rented at a servant. And worse, remembering the fellow's eyes, he was not sure it would do any good.
And how did he know what I was going to ask?
The servant smiled. The man who called himself Bors did not feel at all comfortable until he was back in the room where he had waited on first arriving, and then not much. Even finding the seals on his saddlebags untouched was small comfort. The servant stood in the hallway, not entering.
You may change to your own garments if you wish, my lord. None will see you depart here, nor arrive at your destination. But it may be best to arrive already properly clothed. Someone will come soon to show you the way.
Untouched by any visible hand, the door swung shut. The man who called himself Bors shivered in spite of himself. Hastily he undid the seals and buckles of his saddlebags and pulled out his usual cloak. In the back of his mind, a small voice wondered if the promised power— Even the immortality was worth another meeting like this, but he laughed it down immediately. For that much power, I would praise the great Lord of the Dark under the Dome of Truth. Remembering the commands given him by Baal-Zamon, he fingered the golden flaring sun worked on the breast of the white cloak, and the red shepherd's crook behind the sun, symbol of his office in the world of men. And he almost laughed. There was work, great work, to be done in Taraban and on Almuth Plain.